grounded in some way show their due diligence to what the text says, as well as being creative. So I think it would really be about a question about how do we constitute the relations in the classroom between teachers, students, students and each other, and students in the text, and then what do we want to do with it? What, you know, is the setup, we will show you how to make the correct reading of Claudia Rankine, or is it, here's this text, because as you were saying, I thought that would be really interesting to teach from the political theory point of view, as a text that is in fact making a series of kind of reflections about citizenship and about what power and violence are, and that would be kind of really interesting to see how that played out. But we could do that by kind of putting text in the middle and sort of stepping back a little bit and saying, what do we want to do with it now? And then that would be, I think, a way of some of the worries you might have can be...
I don't have those worries. The one might have those worries can be set free
in a way, because we realise that, because in a way, the colleagues, the concerns that those colleagues have indicate a sort of awareness of their position of power. Mm-hmm. And their concern is that they are caught within that position of power and don't know what to do.
Yes.
Relinquish the power
as much as you can. Interestingly, as the Guardian reviewed it, an American academic teaching it pointed out that when he was asked about teaching that, he was questioned why, you know, that's not poetry, it's sociology. Which
okay.
I think is a really interesting interesting idea, that idea of locating the text and therefore handing over that responsibility.
So the question, so maybe the question is also, what are the texts we, if we, I mean, not everything we teach is texts, so, maybe historians, I don't know, but anyway, how do we choose and decide what counts as a text, and what do we put alongside of it? And part of what might be interesting would be to kind of mess that up a little bit, and I think part of this kind of question of our curriculum can let us do that. You know, I teach political theory, I teach the great text, sometimes I teach political speeches, Malcolm X, you know, maybe I should be teaching Claudia Rankine, and then we could mix and match a little bit, and that would begin to set up different dynamics, and let students bring in things.
More organic.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, quite a few questions. There's one here at the front.
It was sort of a reply in a way to something that the conversation that's been happening, which is like, you know, racism, one of the workings of racism is to make people racialised as white less aware, conscious, knowledgeable, skilled in working with matters of race. And that is a factor in the mix of academics feeling confident to take on subject matter which contains issues of race, because the reality of how racism works is that people really begin to realise when they start to get near those texts that they are absolutely not the expert, and they're having to become the ignorant person. And that's a very uncomfortable position for people who are put forward as teachers, professors, etc. So I just really wanted to put that in the mix of just our understanding of why it's difficult to work with these issues. Even some of the conversations that happened here have displayed that kind of lack of consciousness. Because to do what you're saying, which is for that person, teacher, racialised as white, to demonstrate that level of consciousness has taken a lot of work on that part of that person.
Yeah.
Humility and learning. And that's the challenge, I would say, as part of what we're talking about.
Yeah. Also as well, I guess it's about your willingness to learn, develop as a human being. So for example, when I was an undergraduate, I was studying theology, I had gay and lesbian friends who said to me, you need to go on a homophobic weekend because we think you're too homophobic. So we're going to teach you how to deal with your I was raised a Pentecostal, black, Jamaican Pentecostal, so that's what I've taught to the world in a particular way. But they force me to confront my prejudices. And so what I've attempted to do is now have students who are trans. I say, look, I need to sit down and talk to you about this. I need to understand the issues, the language, the politics, how it intersects with what I'm teaching. So I'm always looking to learn from students from the Congo, from Rwanda, you know, who again, I sit down and say, I want to know what's happening, how do, you know, in order to improve my craft as a teacher so I can engage with them more effectively. So I think it's about personal development, not just in terms of intellectual thought, but understanding culture, engaging with people, and feeding that back into your craft.
Thank you. I have a question at the back.
I used to be a student here 40 years ago in development studies, now called international development. And in the 70s, perhaps the height of the second wave of feminism, if you like, or the politicisation of feminist ideas, the women movement on campus were rattling the cage in a number of ways, and in my department, in DEF, women students in particular were saying, why are there no courses on about women and development? You know, if you seriously try to understand why much of the world is undeveloped and you want to do something about putting it right, we need courses on women and development and underdevelopment. And there were sympathetic members of staff, feminist female teachers, who were also trying to get that into the curriculum. But they were certainly aided by the pressure from below, by the students. And I wonder if any students here are making demands.
Yeah.
Or if you feel
rattle the cages. Rattle.
It seems to me that you should be making demands.
Yeah.
$8,000 a year now, I got it for free.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why aren't you designing the curriculum? You might not get the course you want this year, but somebody in 2 or 3 years' time might get it. The young women who were campaigning while I was a student got lectures put on or seminars put on. They made a bit of part of their assessment in the first year or so of their demands. I think by the second or third year, it was part of the curriculum and the final assessment even.
Yeah.
And became a part of what DEF became. I'm not sure where it is now. But and in more recent years, I think those demanding the greening of the curriculum got many of those aspects into that curriculum as well. Mm. And I think, I'd love to hear, what demands are you making? Were you kicked back? Isn't this the opportunity there for you to have dialogue with the electorate? And if you're not, get on with it.
Yeah, so that's a great question, I think, for you all. You know, why aren't you making more noise? You've got power. So that's what's being said. Who can answer that? Yeah.
You can go down and stuff like that, but I know a lot of people who've just shut up because they don't want to get given a worse grade.
Just keep moving, there's lots of hands up. I think that's just.
Yeah, okay, all right. So, at the front, Kate.
Yeah, well, I just want to say something that sort of touches on a lot of that because, and stuff we're talking about teaching and teaching things maybe we don't feel comfortable with. And anyone who knows me knows that I bang on about feminist pedagogy all the time. But it feels like a lot of this is about. That idea of having the authority in the classroom, the teacher having the authority in the classroom, and how actually dangerous and detrimental that sort of white supremacist patriarchal system of teaching and pedagogy is, and that actually coming into a classroom and saying, I'm just one of you, and empowering students to share the power throughout the classroom, A, can allow for more teaching things that maybe you aren't necessarily an experiencer of, but being able to own your whiteness and kind of still teach those sort of things, and should allow you to be open. I mean, in feminist pedagogy, we talk about allowing the students to create the curriculum, and that's in a course by course, module by module kind of basis. Is like, well, what do you want to learn? What does your experience teach you? And it sounds like being able to dismantle that kind of patriarchal system in the classroom creates the safe spaces and would allow for a more racialized discussion as well. Mm-hmm. I it's not really a question so much as, do we, the panelists maybe see these as linked? Do the students feel like that power is so strong in the classroom with their lecturers that it takes away the power from them? They don't feel empowered, they don't feel like they have a voice, and actually it's the innate structures of the way we teach and the way we've been taught to teach, which is basically how we were taught, that perpetuates this sort of patriarchal white supremacist system. And if we can teach everyone to teach differently, then these things kind of work themselves out naturally. You were saying it doesn't have to be about adding these texts to the curriculum, it's about how you teach the texts you already have and questioning them and being critical about them and allowing your students to have a voice and be critical about them and sort of go, that's not you being critical of me, that's you being critical of whiteness and maleness, and that this, it really needs to be seen in a very holistic, intersectional way, and that it's that level of teaching that everything else can be sort of fixed and slotted into place.
Thank you.
There's a couple of hands over there, sorry. I think people have had their hands up for a long time.
Yeah, I know, but there's someone over here who has longer.
Really?
Michael, yeah.
Sorry, so I hope this is in line with what you what's just been said, because often I worry that these discussions are focused primarily to the humanities, right? So where are the scientists? I don't know,
scientists?
A lot of racialized
hands up the STEM people in here.
Yeah.
Yes, so there are.
Okay.
I think often these are issues that get limited to the humanities. I know the NUS people discussing a while back are predominantly people in science. But I've got my question really about that. It's about TEP and REF, right? So often, I think these discussions become very interesting around the production of modules and stuff like that. But the way in which staff are assessed for career and the way in which the university is held to account, the way it produces the modes of teaching, are by these two major metrics. Now we've got the TEP, we don't need to worry about that, right? Research Excellence Framework and TEP, Teaching Excellence Framework. How do we feel about these as metrics for understanding this issue? Yeah? Because I feel like they might be heavily racialized, particularly in relation to the journals that are published. So my area of research is international relations, which comes out of empire journals, right? But also the impact factor of these journals, I feel like that's a racialized mechanic. And looking at stuff like the TEP and how they measure student outcome and value added as economic, right, is racialized.
Mm.
So how does the panel in the room feel about TEP and REF as metrics and how that factors into our understanding of what the process of truly decolonizing the academy would look like? I don't know if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Who wants to answer that one?
Well, why don't we take more questions and we can finish up at the end?
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
I
yeah. Over here, yeah.
One thing in response to what we were talking about in depth, it is really difficult to try and talk to lecturers about having an extremely white male dominated curricula, because I do depth and I did an African module and I noticed that none of my key readings were by any African scholars. And I tried to say this at the end of the year when he was saying, oh, so how did you find the course? And I tried to say this, and the response I got was so defensive that I felt uncomfortable even trying to respond to what he had said to me.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what my dissertation is on now, about development as a subject and about how white development is and trying to decolonize development. But it is really difficult trying to say anything. I ended up going to my, what are they called? Thank you. I ended up going to my academic advisor to say to her, like, I found it really difficult to have that conversation. And only after she approached him to be like, you made my student feel uncomfortable, did he email me to say, Sharon, do you want to come in and have a conversation?
Yeah.
But otherwise, trying to have that conversation initially can be very difficult with lecturers.
Mm-hmm.
You do feel like you can't really speak to them without them getting defensive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. And Danielle, yeah.
Just to kind of piggyback from that, also, depending on the demographics of the room,
thank you. Yeah, some helpful thoughts for us to pick up on, to think about. So question here, yeah.
This is partially to build on this. I'm a disabled student, I represent disabled students, and we have been arguing about inclusivity for 2 years. I've been part of that, and we do find that often we want to make inclusivity importantly that it overlaps. We find representatives, we don't have any disabled students to represent us, we're missing representatives on the keyboard. Yes, you can. What could we actually say? How many students would it actually take for somebody to listen to problems?
Okay, so can
just to say, I feel like we've had some really patient hands right in front of us
here.
And we're kind of, because of this, the Harvard style room, we're kind of going to the right and the left. But just maybe hear from these hands. And we've got a STEM hand here as well.
I'm happy someone like mentioned STEM. Going back to the attainment gap, issue of that, I didn't quite understand it, to be honest, at first, until I didn't understand how a black student could attend the same university as a white counterpart with the same grades, may not come from the same background, but have the same lecturer, same modules and everything, and still have a lower grade, until I actually experienced that myself when I started university. Being the only black girl in my course was really hard, because I kind of felt like people couldn't see me, even though you can really see me, because, you know, I kind of stand out. I experienced that, and I could understand that, it is hard. And also, going back to safe places, we do need to create more safe spaces for black students, for BAME students. And then going back to safe spaces again, let's look at the SSS, the Student Support Services. How am I, as a black female, supposed to speak to a white, you know, therapist about how it feels being black in this uni? You would only be able to understand me to an extent. And even when I went down that line, I mean, the response was, ooh, there's racism here, is there? Oh, I didn't know that. Like, come on, like, there's racism everywhere. So there's a lot of training that needs to be done. And also, I do feel like, and I have brought this up to the Vice Chancellor, by the way, I do not hold back. also, I do, yeah, we do need to employ more black staff. There's a lack of representation in this university. I have not seen any black lecturer in the school bio, unless they're hiding. I have not seen them. I'm not sure about other schools as well, but I know definitely in the school bio there isn't. So it's about creating those spaces, which I believe like societies like the Womanist, ACS are doing very well, by the way, and more representation for black students.
Okay.
And maybe that is the issue of this.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll pick up on a few of these points at the end, but I just want to say quickly that Students' Union does offer a safe space for VME students. I think on a Thursday, I don't know if anyone has the details, but
I brought that up to the Vice Chancellor.
Okay, thank you. So at the back. Just behind, yeah.
I think to answer his question about representation, I think it comes down to demographics. And I think everybody that just spoke kind of pointed to what I was saying, which I think the overall question is representation and what does it mean to have, you know, a person of color, black, maybe, teacher in your curriculum when there's none. So I come from a department where there's none. And I think I was in the postgraduate level, and then I was the only black student. And I think there was issues that came up when you're talking about race and issues about how to talk about race, which is interesting that my friend here would ask about black film, and that's what my doctor was on. But there's those anxieties and those questions. So I wonder, it sounds like you're like LDC and maybe Creative Writing is doing something better based upon our discussions, because there may be a greater need. But I know, like, from my department, the question was, what do you talk about? I think it's a numbers question. So when you're the only voice there, then you get shifted into the intersectionality of all the other discussions that are going on, but you're not dealing with the racial discussion, but you're bringing other things in. So I wonder then, if we talk a larger discussion about what is a new program and what kind of forces and things that we're creating, how then do you look at representation of who's there making the curriculum choices, but then also who's there teaching the curriculum choices, and then how does that kind of factor into the overall learning?
Okay, thank you. We'll take two questions here, and then we'll try and answer them. Yes, so yeah.
What I tend to find is that when you do
third-year student, and I take shifting powers in 21st century Africa. That is led by a white woman, great lady. She's very nice. She's from South Africa. But the question that I always have in my mind is, if that was a black person leading that seminar group, would there be as much interest in it than someone who's white leading it? And that goes back to your point about personal development and how you sort of had to break down your prejudices. How do you then engage an 18-year-old fresher, Billy Smith, to come in and talk about and understand the perspective of someone who comes from the Caribbean or someone who comes from East Asia? How do we integrate the curriculum if our white lecturers aren't even interested in what the current students have to say?
Yep. It's a really good question. If you watch the film, it's still online. Students have to push for it, and if the students aren't pushing for it, the lecturers won't change. I can't. Then I think you have to challenge the university and argue that they're not giving you a proper education. You know, some of the things that you've said, my heart sinks in terms of the hundreds of experiences I've heard from black students all over the country who feel that their perspective, their ingenuity, their angle on something is not taken seriously. And I think that's a terrible situation and completely contradictory to what a good university degree should do, which is empower you to find your voice and feel that you can articulate it and you can become critical of yourself. So it's failing. The university is failing in that sense. So all I can say is what we've done is when I was an undergraduate, we pushed for change. But when I was in secondary school, we pushed for change. I got tired of pushing and then said, let me do what my foreparents did. We set up our own thing. Mm. So that's what I've done consistently, is set up spaces for black students. So we have a research group in London, one in Canterbury, one in Birmingham. We do stuff in the north. And what we try to do is get undergraduate students, postgraduate students to learn the tools to ask critical questions, the tools for a kind of critical engagement with the subject that they're working with.
I understand your point, and I do agree with you on that. Mm. Sorry, I don't want to dominate the conversation or anything. However, we have spaces already.
Yeah.
I was vice president. There are people who are engaging. Mm. We are trying, we are pushing, but again, we have these barriers that we're constantly neglected. Things that there's not enough push, there's not enough representation,
sure.
There's not enough.
It takes, just in the interest of time, I'm sorry to cut you, as my mother would say, but it has to be radical.
Mm.
You know, unless you actually strike, protest, or as we're doing in Birmingham, burn something down. we realise nothing changes, you know, and I think what you do have in your favour is demographics, because we know that by 2025, 2026, one in four students will be from a minority background. So if universities aren't motivated in terms of any other factor, the students are going to change. The student body across the UK is going to change because of demographics. So they've got to take these issues on board. But again, my thinking is that, to quote Kehinde Andrews, there is a psychosis, although psychosis is a problematic term in terms of the way we use to marginalise black people, marginalise women. There's a psychosis of whiteness, you know, and you can address, you can try and untangle it and work with people therapeutically to deal with it, or you make your starting point that you've got to get off the plantation, take your family with you, and ensure that you survive and thrive. And tragically, that perspective now is being normalised by black students across the country. They're tired. You see it in the literature. Edo Lodge's work, although she's kind of contradictory, but there's a recognition that actually, you know, as we say in Jamaica, we don't talk, right? You know what I mean? So we have to instead form the institutions, create the pathways to empower people, and whoever wants to get on board can get on board, but what we're trying to do fundamentally is create confident, well-educated students, and well-educated in the sense that they understand diverse perspectives, they can think critically and analytically, they can move comfortably in the world, and it's nothing new. The Americans have been doing this for 20 years. you know, 20, 20, 30 years. So let me just end with this. If you're not doing this kind of work, you're being miseducated by your university. And you will be at a disadvantage globally because other students are being educated to think more creatively, more dynamically, and they will seize the rewards out there. So it's a big problem in terms of what you're paying, 9,300 and whatever it is pounds.
Well, I think we need to have a bit of, I think you're, you know, I think it's all very well for you to say, okay, well, we're just going to set up our own thing.
Yeah.
We can't, we're not going to do that in UEA.
Sure.
So what can we do?
Well, I was going to say to this question in that, you know, you're not the, it's not only black students who are not getting the advantage of a decolonized education. It's really important to understand that it's everybody here who's disadvantaged by the way that things are done. You know, that intersectionality that Kate was talking about, you know, for women, for disability, for class, you know, it's really important that all of it gets addressed. And so it's not just, I think the isolation keeps us isolated. You know, I think the plantation likes division. You know, it likes all of the levels of labor that are involved in making the sugar. You know, so I really think that it's important to understand that it's the plantation that's the problem, and that dismantling that is a huge, huge, huge thing. It is radical, but it's necessary.
It isn't. Just to add to the plantation metaphor, my mother is a Maroon. You know about Jamaican history, Marinage. My mother is a Maroon from the Portland Maroons. Their narrative is they got off the plantation and set up their own communities. That's their narrative, you know. So part of, you know, there are many different strategies. Some people stuck in there. You know, if you take Malcolm's dynamic on the plantation, there are different people working in different ways. But my argument is we made this in 2003, you know. Some institutions have made very little progress. What I'm saying is, I don't think you're going to get much change unless you do set up your own thing, unless you do have a centre that deals with this. I think we can come back in 5 years, we're talking the same thing.
Robert, just try and give us something positive.
I'm being a realist.
No.
I'm being a realist. I'd say this. I've invested hours in white colleagues, in colleagues racialized as white, to take empire seriously. You can't avoid it in terms of theology. They haven't done it, and it's led me to this conclusion. Many of them, in my discipline, might be different in other disciplines, the vast majority want to keep it white. It's about power, and they want to hold the power. And unless we tune into that and navigate around it, we keep having these discussions. Why are we discussing this still? Mm. They want to keep it white. Make that, it's critical race theory. Make that your starting point and mobilize around that reality.
Let's go over for a few minutes, okay? Because someone here, you've had your hand up a long time.
On your point, I was going to mention something else. I guess it was from the Murray's conversation before that. Similar kind of experience. I'm half AMA, and long story short, I feel like they had a really amazing opportunity to restructure things because they decided to wipe the slate clean of our course and change it for refreshers, which was a lot of people weren't happy about. Actually, they didn't tell us. But I think one of the things that really frustrated me, and I've spoken to people about, is that you've completely changed it. It can't be that hard, and you've done it because somebody's told you to. So I feel like it's no longer a valid excuse to say, because of these metrics that you were talking about earlier, you did that so easily without telling anybody in less than 6 months. It's no longer an excuse. And similar kind of thing, like I've had pushback, I've spoken to people about it, and I've spoken, when I'm in this room and I'm reading this curriculum around people with faces that don't look like mine, it's hard to come into that, and it's hard to have to sit down and do 10 hours a week and like read these critical theories from hundreds of years ago or whatever that are talking about you being worthless and you being nothing. And so I feel like it goes beyond that. And although I do agree with you about pushing it and making your own thing, similar to what you were saying, what does that do for everybody else? I think when you make spaces like that, it's really great for people who want to join them, but the same kind of thing, eventually I feel like spaces like that should emerge into the mainstream, if that makes sense, to benefit everybody. And similar kind of thing, I feel
think what we're hearing is a lot of difficult experience, particularly by students of colour, that need to be addressed. So perhaps we need to think about what we can do in terms of safe spaces, in terms of teaching starts being able to address questions that oppose that and worries. But I think the message that's coming from this panel is that you, the students, need to push as well in whatever way that you need to push forward with this.
I don't think it should just be about the students, though. I think people of good conscience who have got the moral courage to make the changes should go ahead and make the changes. I think it's like resilience, isn't it? It's all about the students becoming better rather than dealing with the structures. And I think we can put too much pressure on the students. So I'm keen for, you know, I've worked with white scholars who have been sufficiently radical and who have moved the agenda forward. There have been people who've done that. But my sense, as I'm saying, there's only one professor in theology who's black, me. There's only two of us in the whole of the country who teach who are black in theology. So, you know, we're working with a slightly different a dynamic in terms of who we can teach, what we can do. So our approach is, you know, we don't want to hear these stories. What we want to hear is stories of students who say, I read this literature and it spoke to me in my experience and it feels good, you know, and I found my voice and I feel like I can thrive now because I've got these tools, which means I understand why this and this and this took place. Nothing more beautiful than that. And for me, that's what I've invested in, transforming students, particularly black students, to find their own voice and to feel that the way that they think is an advantage, not a disadvantage.
Wish should be heard from everybody. One thing that really irritates me sometimes.
Why?
Is that, no, because it's valid and it's important.
No, nothing should be heard by everybody, but what I'm saying is, but the problem is, the way that the system is structured, if you don't have a place where you can develop that voice, you find it's going to be incredibly difficult to articulate it anyway. And I know from the students who email me that they're even frightened of writing about a particular subject because they fear they'll be marked down or ostracized. So what I'm saying is, another way of thinking about this is, maybe this is the first stage. You build this bridgehead and maybe it can migrate into the mainstream. But I haven't got time to worry about that. I'm interested in how do we liberate our people. What I mean by our people who are committed to a more radical, inclusive agenda within higher education. That's the focal point. I think the migration stuff is just another way of watering down and weakening the attempts to empower black students.
I think Robert has to get a train, and Tessa does too.
Sorry, can I just, I'm going to bring it right down to a really banal sort of housekeeping style announcement, but I don't want to lose the chance, having everyone in the room who's interested in this topic, where the work that Claire and I have done in LDC has got to is talking with the faculty and getting an agreement in principle to give some money to some students to set something up. It's undefined what it is, but if anyone would like to think about that and to have that money, could you please let us know? Because the moment is now to do it. So if you'd like to try to do that, especially if you're in Hum, just let us know either now or by email. Thanks.
Yeah, and let's continue the conversation. It's great that so many of you are here and interested. And thank you very much to all our panelists.